Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, the podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Welcome to today's podcast, everybody. I'm delighted to have with me Bernie Payne, and she has, she's a legal and compliance consultant, and she's got over 20 years worth of experience in doing that. The last 15 or so have been in the recruitment sector, which is why she's joining me today to talk about different routes to market and different ways that agencies might look to engage you as a worker with them. So warm welcome, Bernie. Anything to add to that?
Hi, Julia. Thank you so much for inviting me around today. Nothing to add in terms of context and background about me, because that's not the focus of today. I think the various routes to market for temporary workers, there are four main types. They're all slightly different. So my job today, I feel, is to kind of just help people to navigate that with a little bit more confidence, perhaps, and understand some of the sort of pros and cons of each, I guess.
Yeah, because I guess one of the things I'm finding is that people are looking at different ways of working at the moment. They might have been made redundant, or they might be just having a change of direction and a reevaluation of their lifestyle or whatever. And I think we've got more people working in different ways who might not know this stuff already. And actually, it's not straightforward. I've been linked with the recruitment sector for about 7 years now. When I first came, I was like, what is all this stuff? So I'm really pleased that you're going to kind of explain it all. So there are kind of four main ways that an agency would engage with someone. So what are the kind of main ways, and why is it, well, actually, we first of all need to talk about different employment types very, very briefly, employment status. So we don't want to get into it too much, but it's important, isn't it, for people to understand?
Yeah, I think the thing is that when you're talking about different routes to market, then I always find it helpful when I'm looking at different engagement types to understand or to have some clarification around employment and tax status first. Because, every engagement model has a different employment and tax status. So to understand those kind of now, sort of upfront, then helps to understand some of the advantages and disadvantages of each model once we kind of get into the detail.
Okay, great.
If I deal with employment status first.
Yeah.
So a person's employment status helps to determine what rights and protections they are entitled to. And it also determines their employer's, in inverted commas, responsibilities. And there are three types of employment status. One is an employee, which most people are quite familiar with, so I won't go into that in detail. And the second type is a worker. And the third type is self-employed. When people engage in any form of temporary work, they will generally either be a worker or they will be self-employed. And that will depend on the engagement model that they use. Workers have some rights and protections, quite a few rights and protections, actually, whereas self-employed people have almost no rights and protections. So there is a difference in terms of what your expectations can and should be about what your rights and protections are, depending on it. Now, I'm not going to list all of the rights that you're entitled to as a worker, but I think the ones that I think most people are most interested in are things like the right to be paid at least minimum wage or living wage, depending on how old you are. The right to statutory holiday pay, which is 5.6 weeks paid holiday a year, or 28 days a year. And that would normally include bank holidays if you work full time. And of course, if you don't work full time, if you work less than full time, then you're entitled to a pro rata amount of that holiday entitlement. You're also entitled to statutory sick pay, subject to some minimum eligibility requirements, And also things like maternity, paternity, and adoption pay, again, subject to certain statutory minimum requirements.
Okay.
But another interesting thing is that workers are protected by a piece of legislation called the Agency Worker Regulations, or AWR.
Yes. Okay.
And AWR gives agency workers the right to equal treatment to comparable permanent employees of the client that they're working for with regards to pay and certain other working conditions like holiday, duration of working time, rest periods, things like that.
Okay.
And another thing that workers are entitled to is to be enrolled in a pension, which, as we know, is something that the government is really pushing. And as part of that, your employer has to contribute to that pension as well under something called auto-enrollment. So that's, you know, that's a really big difference between workers and self-employed, is that, you know, your employer will enroll you in a pension. So that's, I guess, employment status for rights, very briefly. So so now we'll move on to tax status. And that is different to employment status for rights.
Okay.
That's largely because there are only two types of tax status.
Okay.
So unlike employment status, where there are three, there's only two types of tax status. You're either employed or you are self-employed. Now,
for tax purposes.
Exactly right. Yeah. So if you have an employed status for tax, well, then as a worker, you will pay income tax and employees' national insurance contributions, which I'll normally refer to as NICs. And your employer pays employer's NICs on your behalf, exactly like permanent employees are paid. Okay. On the flip side, if you have a self-employed status for tax, then the income that you receive from your assignment is not considered earnings for employment. Therefore, a slightly different tax and NICs treatment applies, depending on how you supply your services. Now, deciding somebody's tax status, or indeed their employment status for rights, if there is sort of any kind of a dispute of any sort, that's quite complex, and it depends on a multitude of factors that I'm not going to cover today. But actually, for most of the engagement models we're going to talk about, there are fairly well sort of established or expected statuses for each. So as we talk through the those routes to market, I'll explain to you what the expected or usual employment and tax status for each of them are.
Okay. Okay. Brilliant. So I think that to attempt to summarize, there are three types of employment status. There's employee, worker, and self-employed. Self-employed people have no rights or benefits of that status because they are self-employed, so they've chosen to work for themselves, whereas workers have some and employees have some again. And tax status, there are only two. You're either taxed as an employee or a worker, or you're taxed as a self-employed individual.
Exactly.
Brilliant. So coming on to how someone might work with an agency. Now, when I last temped, which was donkeys years ago, I won't add it up. I was just on what I would say normal agency PAYE, and I think a lot has changed since then. But maybe we could start with that. What is agency PAYE? What does that kind of mean in terms of employment status and tax status, and what are the benefits and pros and cons, really?
Sure. So if you are engaged by an agency on this agency PAYE model, then for rights purposes, you are considered a worker, and for tax purposes, you are considered to be employed. So that means you are paid via the PAYE system, and the agency will deduct from you income tax and employees' NICs before you get paid.
Okay.
Now, the advantages of PAYE is that it's really quick to set up, because all you need to do is complete any sort of registration requirements or give over any compliance documentation to the agency you're going to be working with, and give them some details about yourself so they can set you up on their payroll. So that will be things like your national insurance number, P45 if you have one, or a completing what's called a new starter checklist, which is what used to be called a P46.
Okay.
So then once your temporary assignment starts, there's not really much administration needed on your part, because it's the agency's job to manage all your taxes and national insurance, etc. And of course, you're entitled to all those worker rights as standard.
Okay, so paid holiday and that sort of thing.
Exactly right. So, and all of that really is taken care of and managed by the agency on your behalf. So there's not a lot of administration that makes it really easy for you as an agency worker. Another advantage is that the agency isn't allowed to charge you for using their services. Other than the deductions that they have to make by law for things like income tax and NICs, there's no cost to you.
Okay. Yeah, fine.
Now, the disadvantages of PAYE are that if you're the type of temporary worker who might undertake lots of short-term assignments, you know, in a year, through multiple agencies, because you do 2 or 3 days here and 2 or 3 days there, if that's the type of work that you undertake, well, then that can start to get a bit confusing. And both for you as the worker, but also actually for HMRC as well, to keep up with who's paying you what and when.
Yes, I think in this scenario, I sometimes think of supply teachers as an example. Not that I know education world massively well, but my perception is you might be a supply teacher in one place on Monday, somewhere different on Tuesday. You might be in 5 different schools in a week. You might be working for 5 different agencies, and so they might each be processing your pay through their own payroll. Is that a fair analogy? Or?
I think that's a perfect analogy. Perfect analogy.
Hooray!
and because of this, you know, if you are the type of person that does do multiple assignments and they tend to be quite short term, and you do work with lots of agencies, sometimes that can lead to problems with things like tax code. Because of course, HMRC might think that you have multiple jobs at the same time and give you the wrong tax code, which means you might be taxed more than you need to. And then you've got to run around with HMRC, explain the situation and try and make sure that that's all sorted out. So that can be a little bit of a pain.
Yeah.
Another potential downside is that your credit rating can be affected if you have multiple employers, because you work with multiple agencies. So getting things like credit cards, mortgages, things like that, that can be a little bit more difficult because you can't show consistency of employer or consistency of income. Right.
Okay, yeah. And I suppose if they look at kind of your records, then they'll see fluctuating pay and that sort of thing. Yeah, no, it's a good point, actually. That's not always an obvious point, is it?
No, and I think that's the thing, just to bear in mind, you know, that shouldn't necessarily say don't do it, but I do think you need to, depending on the type of work that you do and whether your assignments are very short and you might deal with multiple agencies, you know, at any one time, that is something that I think just should be borne in mind at least.
Okay. No, that's really helpful. I bet that wouldn't occur to a lot of people. And I guess from the agency's perspective as well. So just think about that supply teacher, say, working for 5 different schools. You've got 5 different agencies processing payroll. And so that's 5 lots of admin going on behind the scenes. It's not really for you as the supply teacher or whatever you might be doing to worry about that, really. But there's 5 lots of admin taking place, aren't there?
Exactly right. And and actually some recruitment agencies don't even offer a pay-as-you-earn option. So even if you wanted to use that route to market, that might not be possible with some agencies, because for some insane reason, agencies aren't legally required to offer an in-house PAYE option to their workers.
Okay. I never knew that, actually. I sort of have, so, I mean, having been in this sector for about 7 years now, I shouldn't really admit to that, but I know that some agencies prefer not to, but I didn't realise that you know, that there was no legal requirement to have it as an option. That's really interesting. I'm so glad we got you on.
Actually, Julia, you say that, but I have even more years on you. And I only realised that as a result of some of the legislation that came out of the Good Work Plan that was instituted a few years ago, that was all about this, the modern ways of working and whether they were right and sufficient for what the country needs right now. And it was actually something that was in a consultation document that I queried, actually, with the Employment Agency Standards Inspectorate, because I believed all agencies had to offer an in-house PAYE option. And I was informed that that was not actually the case.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is my fact for the week then. I've learned something new. So that's brilliant. But I mean, it's not unusual for agencies to outsource their payroll provision. And I guess we'll probably come on to umbrella companies, which is not just about payroll, but that is probably the big advantage from the agency side of things. So we do have another podcast where we look at umbrella in detail, but just briefly for the audience, what is an umbrella company and how does that engagement work?
Sure. So if you work via an umbrella, then instead of working directly with the agency, instead you're engaged under what's called an overarching contract of employment with an umbrella company. And an umbrella company is basically a company whose sole function is to employ temporary workers for agencies indeed end clients maybe as well. So.
Yeah.
Now, if you do work with an umbrella, if you use an umbrella, then your rights status is that of a worker and you will have an employed tax status. So very similar to PAYE for those purposes.
Yeah.
And again, quite similar to PAYE. It's pretty quick to set up. This route, you know, you find an umbrella company and basically register with them in a similar way that you would to an agency, provide your national insurance number, P45, etc. And then again, once the assignment starts, there's almost no administrative burden on you as the worker. Because the umbrella takes responsibility for deducting and managing all your taxes, etc.
Yeah.
Now, one of the beauties, if you like, of using an umbrella is that it offsets that disadvantage that you have with agency PAYE of moving and showing lots of different employers. Because if you use one umbrella, it shows continued employment for the purposes of applying for credit. Because even though you might be working with multiple agencies and multiple end clients, your employer of record stays the same every time. So that's the advantage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, because an umbrella's main function is to just employ people, and because there are a lot of umbrellas on the market, they all want to be attracting as many workers as they can to use their services. You know, there are umbrellas who have literally thousands and thousands of workers on their books. And because of that, they can offer some really great benefits at massive discounts because they have enormous buying power. So, you know, workers can get really great deals on things like life insurance, health insurance, mortgage advice, or even, you know, better value on their mortgages, gym membership, all those kinds of things, which, okay, may be intangible for some, but actually, if you're the main breadwinner of the family and you're working as a temporary worker, well, having, you know, the access to some really enormous, important discounts for things that you might want for need for you and your family, that can be a huge advantage. You know, if you take advantage of all of the benefits and offers, that can add up to hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of pounds a year in saving.
Okay, so there's a lot of good stuff about working through an umbrella. What are the less good points then?
So, I think the first and probably the most important one is that the umbrella industry is completely unregulated from a legislative perspective. So although there are many, many really, really good umbrella companies, there are lots of non-compliant ones as well. And if you make the wrong choice as to which umbrella company to engage with, and if they don't make the right deductions and payments to HMRC for tax and NICs, then you can end up being liable yourself to the tax man. Or indeed the agency that engages with that umbrella for your services, they might be held liable for the umbrella's failings. And that means that there are agencies often implement what we call an approved supplier list with umbrella companies. Yeah. So that means that any workers that the agency engage can only work through those approved umbrella companies. And of course, if the umbrella company that you normally use isn't on that list, then you've got to end up, or you end up having to work through different umbrellas all the time, which then takes out that advantage. You don't then have that consistency of employer, you know, that you do. But I think the biggest thing with regards to non-compliance is the potential for the individual worker to be held liable if the right tax and NICs are not being paid. So
I guess from HMRC's perspective, they would take the view that we've not had enough tax and NASH insurance from your from the work that you've done. You've benefited from that because you've not paid enough, so now you owe us this money. And I'm not necessarily saying that whether that's right or wrong, but that would be their perspective. So one of the things I do sort of say to people is you can check your tax record at HMRC really, really easily. So you know, once you've had a few pays from whether it's agency PAYE or whether it's through an umbrella, if you think someone is paying HMRC tax and NASH insurance, just check it. You can log in online. If you haven't already got a login, you can create one reasonably easy. I think it's a long time since I created mine, and just check on a regular basis. Sorry, I slightly interrupted you there, but I just thought that was helpful.
No, but I think that's a really good point, Julia. And I think that's such good advice. The other thing is that, you know, as a worker, you are entitled to an itemized payslip. So make sure you check the payslips that you're getting either from your agency or your umbrella company. And if there is anything on there that doesn't make sense to you, you need to be checking that with the umbrella, because half of the time, you know, what we hear from the market is, you know, a lot of temporary workers engage with an umbrella and believe they are compliant and are doing everything they should do. So it's not necessarily the intention of the individual worker to defraud HMRC in any way. They actually don't realise that that's what's happening. And yet they're obviously the ones that may be held liable for any shortfall. So, you know, it's your obligation as the worker who is going to engage with this umbrella, you really need to make sure you are using, you know, best in class, and that they are doing what they should be doing. You know, so the other thing, other than, you know, checking your tax record on HMRC's website and of course, the checking your payslips on a regular basis, and make sure that all of the money that you think you have earned in terms of your hours, make sure it is all on there and being accounted for properly. The other option or other thing that you could look to do is to use an umbrella company that has been accredited by a trade body called the FCSA, which is the Freelancer and Contractor Services Association, because they undergo some quite very stringent, very robust due diligence and audits in terms of their tax compliance. So they are always a good one to look to when choosing an umbrella company.
Yeah, and in terms of the umbrella side of things, how does it work pay-wise? So I'm just thinking, I know that there's sometimes confusion and sometimes workers might misunderstand their pay rate and they associate that with kind of being with working through an umbrella, and it can be confusing, can't it? So I mean, we don't want to go into huge amounts of detail, but if you could try and briefly explain how it works, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the thing is that the umbrella company does not offer this service for free.
<You know>?
It's very unfortunate. But But actually, yeah, the individual worker has to pay the umbrella a management fee for their service of employing and paying you.
The fee that the umbrella retains, where does that come from then, if that's not a silly question?
Okay, so basically what happens is that the agency pays a certain rate to the umbrella. And out of the rate that the agency pays to the umbrella, they take that management fee at that point. But they also take out their cost of employing you. So things like the paid holiday that they have to give you and the employer's NICs that they have to pay as your employer, all of that also comes out of the rate that the agency pays to the umbrella. And those costs are deducted by the umbrella before they make any payments to you. And sometimes that can mean you end up being worse off than using an agency PAYE model, because the agency can't charge you for any of those costs, but the umbrella company can.
Right. But of course, the agency is still paying those costs. It's just that you, the worker, don't necessarily see those costs being paid. So they would probably be coming out of the agency's overhead somewhere, or in kind of the whatever the charge out rate is that they charge the clients that you're working for. Whereas with an umbrella, there is no other income for that umbrella. So they have to legally pay employers national insurance, etc., but they can only go from the money paid to them from the agency. And I think sometimes it can be really confusing as to whose money it is that the agency is paying the umbrella. And I think this is where the key information documents piece of legislation that came out last year is really, really helpful. And I'm not going to go into it masses, but to our listeners, anyone who is engaging with an agency, that agency is legally obliged to provide you with a key information document which outlines all sorts of stuff about how you're going to be paid, what your rights are, etc. And I might have skated over that too quickly. Jump in, Bernie, and correct me if I've got any of that wrong.
No, that's absolutely right. Yes, your agency does have to give you a key information document which does break down how you will be paid. And indeed, actually, you know, it will show things like what the umbrella management fee is as well.
Yeah. Great. Perfect. Anything else on umbrella? I think we've covered most things. If we have covered most things, then should we go on to being a sole trader? And so, you know, what is a sole trader? Do agencies work with sole traders even? There's all sorts of stuff that I hear, but you tell us.
Yeah, so sole traders are very much a sort of a legitimate part of the supply chain, if you like, when we're talking about temporary work. As a whole, they tend to be very common within the construction industry, but actually there are sole traders in all sectors. It's certainly not exclusive to the construction industry. It's just a lot more common. Now, as you mentioned, they aren't always commonly used if you work via an agency, and I will explain why in just a minute.
Okay.
So sole traders are generally considered self-employed for rights purposes. So you really don't have any rights or protections, and self-employed for tax purposes under most circumstances. And again, I'll explain that. So you won't get sick pay or holiday pay or any of those things. Now, sole traders provide their services as a business, but they don't have to set up or maintain their own company or anything like that.
Okay.
So they still engage with the agency as an individual, as a person, but instead of the agency making PAYE deductions, you get paid on a gross basis, that is, without any deduction. Okay. Now, what happens then is that you, as the sole trader, you have to report all those payments to HMRC in a self-assessment that you will complete every year. And then you pay income tax and national insurance direct to HMRC on your profits.
Okay.
But instead of paying employee levels, that's called class one national insurance, you pay a different type of national insurance called class two and class four NICs, depending on how much you earn.
Yeah. Okay.
And generally that difference in the NICs, the amount of NICs that you pay, creates a certain amount of tax efficiency. So the advantages of a sole trader are that you're acting more like a business, although you're not working through a company of any description. And your take-home pay, if you like, is a little bit more because of that difference in the type of NICs you pay.
Okay. And but then you've got to pay that at the end of the year. So if I was a sole trader, I would probably put some money aside each month. But we're not here to give financial advice to our listeners. But that's probably what most sole traders do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is the difficulty of only paying your tax and NICs once a year, is to make sure you do have enough to cover those tax and NICs liabilities. And that is indeed one of the disadvantages of being sole traders, is that it is more difficult to manage than the other two options because you have to report your own taxes. You know, nobody's doing that for you. And you have to make sure you have the money to pay them. And of course, if you get any of those calculations wrong, well, then HMRC will be coming after you to make sure that you do pay the right amount of tax and NICs.
Yeah, and I guess also as a sole trader, you've got to do admin and things like invoicing, presumably have insurance. Certainly if I got someone out to fix my boiler, I expect he or she would be a sole trader and I would expect them to provide their own insurance. So, you know, I guess there's a lot of extra stuff around it, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And even though you're not working through a company, even though you're supplying services as an individual, because you are acting as a business, you know, if you get close to or exceed £85,000 turnover in a year, you have to register for VAT as well, of course. And you have to make sure that you monitor and manage all of those VAT payments. So there is a lot more administration involved. Yeah.
Yeah. And what would be the reason as to why we don't see sole traders engaged a huge amount through recruitment agencies?
So if a sole trader is engaged by an agency due to a very complex piece of tax legislation that I won't explain in any detail, but it basically requires that agency to determine whether a sole trader is genuinely self-employed or not for tax purposes.
Yeah.
And if they believe you're not, then they're not allowed to make gross payments to you. So the way that the agency has to determine whether you are genuinely self-employed or not is that they have to undertake something called a supervision, direction and control test, or SDC.
Right.
And normally what agencies will do is they will ask both the temporary worker, the sole trader, him or herself, and the client for whose your services are being provided to answer questions about, the nature of the assignment and how you work in practice to make that assessment or determination of whether you are or are not subject to supervision, direction, or control. And if they determine that you're not subject to SDC, then they are allowed to pay you gross. But if they decide that you are subject to SDC, then the agency has to deduct PAYE in exactly the same as an agency PAYE setup, but without any of the rights associated with being a worker.
Okay. So this is where going through at the start, the employment statuses and tax statuses was really, really helpful. And I guess from the agency's perspective, if they engage someone as a sole trader and then they're later found to not be genuinely self-employed in HMRC's view, I guess that then has a financial risk for that agency for engaging them in the first place. Am I right on that?
Very much so. And that is one of the reasons why some agencies prefer not to engage sole traders at all, because they don't necessarily have the confidence in their own ability to correctly assess whether a sole trader is genuinely subject to supervision and direction and control as HMRC would look at it. So because of that potential uncertainty, and certainly because of the fear of the liabilities that the agency would be exposed to, many agencies simply choose not to engage sole traders at all. But we are seeing an uptick. We are seeing, in the market generally, a lot more agencies are looking to put the right processes in place and be able to to offer, you know, sole traders as a route to market for them.
Okay, well, that's really positive. And I guess I can have some sympathy with agencies in terms of, I mean, I guess for our listeners, they might be thinking, well, it's easy. You can tell whether I'm supervised, directed or controlled. But actually, don't forget, the agency is stuck in the middle between you as a sole trader and whoever it is you're working for. So they have no real view to know how it works, and even whether the information they're being told is genuine or not. Anyway, I'm sort of digressing a bit. I think we've covered most things in relation to sole traders. So if we move on to the other type of self-employment, which is if you work through your own limited company, and in our world, we call it a personal service company, don't we?
Yes, we do. Generally, we refer to it as a personal service company, or more commonly, a PSC. So that's generally how I'll refer to it. But what I would say is, this isn't just for contractors who work via a company. It also applies to contractors who work as a partnership. So it applies equally to both types.
Yeah, that's a really important point, actually. Yes. So what is a personal service company or a PSC?
So, well, first of all, PSCs are considered to be self-employed for rights purposes, and can either be employed or self-employed for tax purposes, which again, I will explain. So in this scenario, the worker sets up his or her own limited company or partnership. Mm-hmm. So instead of me supplying my services as Bernie Payne, for example, I supply my services as a company, Bernie Payne Limited. And the advantage of working as a PSC is that if you are genuinely self-employed in the way that you supply your services, well, the company, the limited company that you manage and own, is paid gross, that is without any deductions by the agency. And there are tax and NICS efficiencies of working in this way. And those efficiencies mean that your take-home pay, if your net pay, if you like, is higher than if you were to use a PAYE or umbrella model. But that is not always the case. Okay, so the higher your rate, whether that's a daily rate or an hourly rate, the more those tax efficiencies work in your favor. But realistically, any pay rate, if it is less than about £25 an hour, then a limited company setup is really not for you. You'll probably actually get a better take-home pay through an agency PAYE or an umbrella model. So don't always assume that using a PSC is going to mean lots more take-home pay. That actually isn't the case at the lower rates.
Okay. And I guess working as through your personal service company, you then draw money out of that company as your income. But then that company also has to adhere to company law and do its kind of corporation tax and that side of things as well. So I believe I'm right about that.
Absolutely. If you operate as a PSC, it does take a lot of time and energy both to set up and run that company. And that's the case even if you engage an accountant to help you with your books, etc.
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot of dead time, if you like. And by that, I mean time that you can't be charging clients for, because it's the time that you take to maintain and administrate your own business. So it's not chargeable time.
Yeah, and of course, because you would be a director listed at Companies House, then you have legal obligations as a company director. And that is something that that not everyone realises. And I'm hoping that you know, most people setting up a limited company do some research. But then I think they get an accountant on board and they sort of feel like that accountant is running the finances of the business. And they kind of, I've had several times people seem to forget that it's their responsibility, which is a difficult one, because if you're paying an accountant to look after things, how can it still be your responsibility? But it is, isn't it, in the eyes of the law?
Absolutely right. You know, you have a legal obligation to run that company, you know, the way that it should be run. And actually, you know, if any of its calculations are wrong, whether that is for any income tax or corporation tax or VAT or any of those things, then you as the director are the ones that would be liable.
Yeah. So anyway, I didn't mean to put everyone off because actually lots of people do this very successfully. But it's just a point that I feel is important. So anything else in relation to working through a personal service company?
Yes. Well, there's some new tax legislation that's actually already in force in the public sector and is about to go live in April. In the private sector, which is called the off-payroll rules or IR35. Mm. Now, I know that you've covered this, in other podcasts, so I'm not going to go into detail, but, you know, in short, basically from April, if you do provide your services as a PSC or a partnership to a public authority or a medium or large sized private sector client, well, then that end client becomes responsible for determining your tax status. And if they decide that you're not genuinely self-employed for tax purposes, that's what we refer to as being inside IR35, well, then the agency that you work through, they have to deduct tax and NICs from you as though you are an agency PAYE worker. But you're still considered self-employed for rights purposes. So again, essentially, that is, even if you are deemed to be inside IR35 and you are paying tax like an employee, then you would still be treated as self-employed for rights purposes. So that means ultimately you just get the worst of both worlds.
Yes, you're being taxed as an employee, but with absolutely no rights that normally go alongside that. But and also, you don't necessarily have a choice because the decision about your tax status is made by your client. Now, we have covered it in other podcasts, so I can include a link to those in the notes that go with this. It is a bit complicated. I'm hoping that as April comes and when clients get used to going through the processes, and indeed when you as our listeners get used to going through the processes, then hopefully it will kind of become a bit smoother. But I think we will be expecting a slightly rocky ride through April, May, June, and it will settle down eventually. So that's kind of the main ways of being engaged through an agency. And there's just one other one just to touch on very, very quickly. And it probably doesn't really fit here, but there's nowhere else to fit it. And that is if you're ever engaged directly by the client. So I guess sometimes agencies may find work for someone, and maybe the client occasionally will want to put them on their own payroll. I'm guessing it doesn't happen a huge amount, because if I was using an agency, I wouldn't do the payroll. But talk us through kind of direct engagement with the client just briefly.
Yeah, sure. So there are clients, and actually fixed term contracts are particularly common when clients are looking for cover for things like maternity leave. So they are still quite common, options. And basically a fixed term contract is where the end client will employ you. So as an employee, whereby you have full employment rights, so you are neither a worker nor self-employed, you are actually a full employee. But instead of being employed for a permanent, indefinite basis, like you would expect, you are employed by that client for a defined or set period of time. So 9 months or 18 months or something like that. And what that means is then the agency will step out completely. You will be issued with an employment contract from your client, soon to be your employer, once you sign it, of course. And then you simply work as an employee for the duration of the fixed term contract, unless, of course, the client and you decide at any point maybe to extend that, or indeed, change that into permanent indefinite employment, which, of course, is the most sort of common form of employment of all.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, I think that covers everything I had in mind for our listeners. Was there anything else from your perspective at all?
No, I don't think so. I hope that's given people just a little bit more understanding about how they work.
Yeah.
It can be quite difficult. to understand, particularly because of the difference between what your employment status is for rights versus tax. And as we've seen, they can be different. So, you know, and tax law in particular is always really complicated. But I think the thing is that so long as you have an understanding of what you are and are not entitled to, and so long as you have an understanding of how you are being paid, then that will get you through. That, you know, you will come to the right decision about which route to market is the best for you.
Yeah, perfect. And of course, there's loads of information on iWork's website. And actually, there's lots of information on the government's website, gov.uk. So that's also a good resource for people. So huge thank you very much for taking us through that. So you managed to break down stuff that's quite complicated really, really well. And just for our listeners, we're recording this on a Friday, and it seems like, well, from my perspective, I seem to feel like I've had quite a long week, and I can only imagine how Bernie feels spending quite a bit of her time ensconced in legal and compliance stuff. So massive thank you so much for joining us. It's been lovely having you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.